Then, let us move on to Perek Gimel, chapter 23. The last of these predictions of the downfall of nations. This is geared towards Sur, or Tsor, I should say, and possibly Sidon as well. The chapter has a very simple structure. It has three parts. Sentences 1 to 6, Tsor is going to fall. The people of the sea merchants specifically, are going to wail. They're going to cry. The second part of the chapter, sentence 7 to 14, God has brought this upon you. And then the last part of it, sentences 15 to 18, a prediction of Tsor's fate after their collapse. What's going to be? What's going to happen to them next? It's a very straightforward type of a chapter as chapters go. The only problem that we have with this chapter, and the only thing we really need to spend a lot of time on here, is what's wrong with Tsor? Meaning, we knew what was wrong with Bavel, right? They destroy the Beis HaMikdash. We know what's wrong with Ashur. They exile the northern kingdom and attack the southern kingdom. We figured out what was wrong with Yishmael, right? Not helping the Jews when they came through. We figured out what was wrong with Edom, right? We went through Edom as well. Who else did we do? The Plishtim. We did Moab. Egypt was not featured in this section. Egypt did not receive any of the prophecies, I think. Did we have anything? Oh, no, sorry, we did have Egypt. You are correct. We did. In Brachim Yotet and Chaf, we did have Egypt. We even mentioned Ethiopia at one point. But what's our relationship with Tsor? Like, why are you angry at Tsor? What's the big deal? So much so that look what Abarbanel does. I brought this in number 5 more for the sake of, I wouldn't call it quite comic relief, but it's funny. Abarbanel quotes a view that apparently was popular among some. In number 5, Ra'ui Shateida, he says that you should know that the Tsor, or Tyre, mentioned by the prophets, some of our own have thought, that should say thought, this is the acclaimed nation of Venice. How do you like that? Some people thought Tsor was a reference to Venice. They were brought to this by the fact that Yeshaya and Yechezkel both mentioned the descriptions of Tyre and that it was built on the sea. It's built on the water. Right? Venice today? On the water? Underwater? Yeah. But this is clearly erroneous, for Yeshayahu and Yechezkel both prophesied regarding Tyre, and it has been 2,000 years since they prophesied, each in his own generation. Tyre, Tsor, has to have been around for at least 2,000 years, he says. Venice, according to the Chronicles, began and was built for those who fished approximately a millennium ago as of now, and no more. Venice isn't that old. This is among the factors which demonstrate that Tsor, about which the prophets foretold her destruction, was another city older than Venice by more than 1,000 years. Of course, we have Tsor and Tanakh, but his point is, whoever it is that Yeshaya is talking about can't be Venice. Venice doesn't exist yet. That's the idea. If you took it to be Venice, then you could say, well, Venice, Italy, Rome, Italy, is somehow Edom related, but he says it can't be Venice. Yes, Moshe.
Just an idea, but what source is it?
Yes.
I'm just guessing that Tsor was involved in the provision of wood and timber for the building of the Mikdash.
Correct.
But Tsor was also an open market. And the Assyrians got their timber for their the various things which came to the armies against Israel.
Mm.
So it was a market for everybody.
Right. So Moshe suggests something, part of which I think we will use, part of which I think doesn't work. He points out that sometimes somebody may be your ally, but that doesn't mean you can't be outbid. It could be that they also furnish the Assyrians. So the outbidding part is relevant. However, the Assyrians leveled Tsor. When it's talking about the destruction of Tsor, the Assyrians, we know, destroyed Tsor. So anything they got from Tsor was not willingly provided. However, what we'll see eventually, likely next week, will be that the guts of this chapter are a critique of the mercenary approach. So that piece of it, selling to the highest bidder just out to make money, is indeed very much part of this critique of the city of Tsur. Just for reference, because I don't know, I didn't mention it. Everyone knows where Tyre is? Phoenicia. Where's Phoenicia? It's Lebanon. It's the northern area. That's what we're talking about. Lebanon, Syria. That's the area. Tsur, Sidon, and the cities exist today. Whether they're in the same exact spot or not, I don't know. But but roughly that area, they're port cities. So here's our history with Tsur. First of all, there's a question in general as you read this. I'm just mentioning it. I don't want you to obsess about it, please, because we're not going to be able to answer it. Of whether you read Tsur and Sidon as one nation, which Abarbanel does, or as two nations, which Rashi does, which the Malbim does. Is this a prediction of the downfall of Tsur and Sidon as one nation, or is the downfall of Tsur and Sidon is a separate player? They both inhabit the land north of Israel along the Mediterranean coast. Sidon, we know genealogically, is the Bechor of Canaan. Right? That's mentioned in the Chumash. We don't have a genealogy for where Tsur came from. Sidon had their land stolen or taken, depending on how you read that, by the tribe of Dan. Remember the story at the end of Sefer Shoftim with Pesel Micha? The tribe of Dan says, we don't have enough land in our area near the Mediterranean. We're going to go north and just take the land of Sidon because they don't seem to have much of an army. And that's what they do. And there's some debate among the commentators as to whether that was actually Dun's land. It's part of Israel, and it was what Dun was always supposed to get. Or whether they actually left the boundaries of the land of Israel to raid Sidon. That's a machlokas. But we have a very mixed relationship with Tsur. Leave aside Sidon. On the one hand, as Moish mentions, Hiram, the king of Tsur, had a covenant with David HaMelech, with King David first. He built a palace for King David in Shmuel Bet, Perek Hey, the fifth chapter of Shmuel Bet. And then he has a pact with Shlomo. He builds the Beis HaMikdash for him in Malachim Aleph, Perek Vav, and so on from there. So we have a very positive relationship. Sidon is interesting. There was a woman by the name of Jezebel, wife of King Ahab. She was the daughter of the king of Sidon. And then she had a daughter named Atalia. Both mother and daughter were murderers and ended up being killed. One can imagine that the people of Sidon were not fans of ours, as a result of that. But none of this really gives me a sense of what our relationship is with them. And so I turn to three prophecies, which if you look at your sheet in source number 6, I gave you the references so everybody can look them up. First, turn to Amos. Amos is in Treasar, the collection of 12 small books of prophecy. So you are looking at page 1357, I believe. Yeah, 1357. This stretch of the book of Amos involves criticisms of various nations for their sins and what God is going to punish them for. So look at what he says about Tyre, about Tsur. Thus said Hashem, for three transgressions of Tyre I have overlooked, but for four I will not pardon them. What is their fourth sin? There's a lot of discussion about how to read the three and the four. I'm not taking a lot of time on that right now. But what is their sin? For their delivering a total exile to Edom, not remembering the covenant of brothers. And so I am going to destroy Tsur. They sold the Jews to Edom. So commentators generally assume this is referring to Rome and the Second Temple, the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash. They did not remember the covenant of brothers, their deal with Shlomo. That's the idea. So they betrayed us when the Second Temple was destroyed. And Yeshaya, according to this read, would now be predicting the ultimate downfall of Tsur because of what they do to us, selling us to the Romans, assisting in the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash, perhaps, as Moshe suggests, with materials. We don't know. That's one prophecy. Second prophecy is Yoel, which go back a couple of pages, or not even, page 1355, very convenient. Chapter 4, sentences 4 to 8. God speaks about the future where he's going to gather in our exiles. And he says, just working with the English translation and the Art Scroll for time purposes, what are you to me, O Tsor and Sidon and all the districts of the Plishtim? Are you paying requital? 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 I don't know that word. What's it in the Hebrew? Are you paying me gomlim? Ah, that I understand. Okay, you're paying me in exchange. And if you are, gomel me. Swiftly and soon will I return your gemul upon your head. For you have taken my silver and my gold, and you have brought my desirable and good possessions to your palaces, and you sold the children of Judah and the children of Jerusalem to the children of the Greeks in order to distance them from their border. So according to this, they betrayed us to the Greeks / Romans. Again, presumably, destruction of the Second Temple. But children of the Greeks would include the Romans as well. So that's a second one. And then the third prophecy of the three is Yechezkel, Ezekiel. And here he goes on at length. Page 1267, chapters 26 to 28. Yechezkel has a lot to say about Tsor. Chapters 26 to 28. We are not going to read the whole thing. But there are some highlights that you should see. Yechezkel, remember, is a prophet when the Jews are in exile after the destruction of the First Temple. Sorry? Yes, 1267. I thought I announced it. He says, Son of man, because Tsor has said of Yerushalayim, Hurrah, the gateways of the nations have been broken, it is turned towards me, I will be filled, for she was destroyed. In other words, they say, we are going to grow as a result of the destruction of Yerushalayim. They are happy when Yerushalayim is destroyed. So Hashem says, I'm going to bring many nations against you, and here's a lot of water imagery. As the sea brings up its waves, they will destroy the walls of Tsor, break down her towers, scrape away her soil, make her into a bare rock. She will be a spreading place for the fishing nets in the midst of the sea, for I have spoken, and so on. He describes a Babylonian siege of Tsor. Flip the page. And the downfall of this once great city. And then you look at chapter 27, where again he gives an elegy for the destruction of Tsor, and he talks about the beauty that Tsor once had. I want to call your attention specifically to, where is it? Hang on. No, it's not yet. It's coming still. We're not there yet. Flip on to 1271, where you continue to describe the beauty of it, and this is where you'll see what I'm looking for. The Pasuk Tet Zayin, sentence 16. A lot of the words here that are associated with the beauty of what Tsor once had are words that are also described in the context of the Beis HaMikdash. You see, a lot of these words should be familiar. The Kadkod as one of them, as one example. You've got Butz in here, you've got Tcheles in here. But there was also something else. And is it on the next page then? There were stones of the Choshen that I remember being in this section. Oh, you know why? It's coming in 28. Okay. So 27 is all about the fall of the beauty of Tsor and their wealth. And then in 28... Look at 28 on page 1273. A new prophecy against Tsor. He says, because your heart has grown proud, and you have said, I am a god. I occupy the seat of God in the heart of the seas, but you are a man, not a god. Though you set your heart like the heart of God, are you wiser than Daniel or Daniel? We talked about this line when we learned Sefer Daniel and who exactly this is referring to. I'm not going back to it now. You've acquired a lot of wealth, you've acquired a lot of beauty, and you will be brought low. There's a passage here which is brought in the Midrash to suggest that Hiram, king of Tsor, because he was involved in building the Beis HaMikdash, was rewarded by being brought to Gan Eden. But he thought of himself as being as being like a god, and he became arrogant, and therefore he was cast out. That is based on this line that we just read. Your heart has grown proud. You said, I am a God. I occupy the seat of God in the heart of the seas. But also, it's because, jump down to the line 13. Be'eden gan Elokim hayisa. Right? In the English, they read it as a question. But in the Hebrew, they do not. It could be read as, you were in Eden, the garden of God. You had all the precious gems, and that's where you see Odem, Pitada, Yahalom, Tarshish, Yoshfei, Sapir, Nofech, Bareket. You see that? All these stones, not all the stones, but a lot of the stones from the Choshen, from the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. You had all of these things, but you became arrogant, and therefore I cast you out. If you jump to sentence Yudchet, you find him being cast out for his sins and for his arrogance. Really, he's 17 and 18. For the sins of his arrogance. So this is Yechezkel's prediction of their fall. And their sins are, back in the beginning of 26 we saw, they egged on the destruction of the temple by the Babylonians, as well as their arrogance. So, in other words, after all is said and done, there is no smoking gun exactly. We have some vague references. The idea that they sell us out after the destruction of the second temple to the Greeks, to the Romans. The idea that they rejoice when the second temple is destroyed. The idea that they rejoice when the first temple is destroyed. But you don't have like a particular event that happened prior to this point in Tanakh that you could actually say this is it. Which leads to the question, so when exactly is it that they're going to get destroyed the way that Yeshaya is predicting? When is all of this supposed to happen to them? So it depends on what it is that they've done wrong. Right? If what they do wrong is only the destruction of the second temple, it doesn't make sense that their punishment is going to occur now. So what exactly is he predicting? So if you look at your sheet, you'll see source number 7. Rashi says, Rashi's commenting on a verse in our chapter, so I guess you have to go back to our chapter. Sorry, more page flipping. Page 991, chapter 23, sentence 1. Okay, Masat Sor, the vision about Sor, about their punishment. Heililu aniyot Tarshish. Heililu is like the word yelala, which is to cry, to wail. Heililu yoshve aniyot Tarshish. The boats of Tarshish should cry. Kishudad mibayit mibo me'eretz kitim niglalamo. This is the key. It is destroyed mibayit. The word mibayit I'm going to skip for now. Mibo me'eretz kitim niglalamo. Because of the one who came from kitim is the way that Rashi reads it. And Rashi says the one who came from kitim is a reference to the Romans. They're the ones who destroyed Tsor. The Romans are going to destroy Tsor. That's Rashi. Radak has a different read. Radak in source number 8 says, no, it's the Babylonians. He says, we see that Nebuchadnezzar destroyed her, as is explained in Yechezkel, the chapters we just read. The Kittim are Greek. So he says, So how could it say she is exiled from the land of the Kittim? What does that mean? My father explained Kittim were merchants who traveled to Babylon and told them to come to Tsor, that they could conquer it, and they would help them and come to them via the sea. So what it's trying to say is that the people of Kittim caused their exile. The people of Kittim went to the Babylonians. So one view is that it's the Romans, one view is that it's the Babylonians, and then Don Isaac Abarbanel says, I'll go you one better. It's both. Both. Source number 9. Reading my English. That which the commentators wrote that the destruction mentioned by Yeshaya in this prophecy is the same as that mentioned by Yechezkel is a clear error in my eyes. Yeshaya did not mention that Nebuchadnezzar would come upon Tsor as Yechezkel did. Yeshaya never mentions Babylonians. Because of all those reasons, he says, which I skipped in the interests of time and space, He says, I have said that the two prophets, Yeshaya and Yechezkel, did not have the same signon in this matter. Signon is the Gemara's term for the style of a prophet. What he's saying is, they're not carrying the same message. Their prophecies were different, even though both of them prophesied regarding Tyre. Yeshaya mentioned that Tyre would be brought low, for raiders would attack her via Sancheirev. And I have no doubt this was in the time of Chizkiyahu. And because when Jerusalem was first destroyed, Tyre rejoiced at the destruction of Judea and did not remember the covenant of brothers or the love of neighbors, therefore destruction and complete collapse were decreed for Tyre and Sidon for that sin. And regarding that second great complete downfall which came to them via King Nebuchadnezzar, Yechezkel prophesied. So in other words, what he's saying is, in Yeshaya we learn, the Assyrians are going to level Tsor. However, they're going to recover, as we'll see at the end of the chapter. After that, much later, the Babylonians are going to come in. Tsor is going to egg them on. And because of that, Yechezkel will envision a second collapse for Tsor. That's the way that Abarbanel reads it. Don't make the mistake of thinking that everybody is talking about the same thing in Tanakh. That's his point. Sometimes you get beautiful Divrei Torah when you can manage to link a whole bunch of different things together. And sometimes it's an illusion. You have to be willing to recognize that. When it happens, it's disappointing that it's an illusion, but so it goes. But that's the idea. So Yeshaya is predicting, according to Abarbanel, and Abarbanel fits very well, that this is going to be a downfall of Tsor at the hands of the Assyrians. And so what the commentators do is they borrow from those later prophecies, those later nevuot, to fill in what's going on here. So Radak and Amos, which I brought you in source number 10, says that that Tsor's sin was that they joined into the destruction of the second temple, the second Beis HaMikdash. He says that's the issue, that they joined in with the destruction of the second temple. They sold our youths into captivity. That's Radak. Abarbanel says that because they lived right next to us in source number 11, they used to kidnap Jewish youths and sell them to the Greeks, which is a verse that indeed was seen in Yoel. And they sold them off to the sons of the Greeks. The Dav Mikra edition suggests that the sin is related to commerce. It's about commerce. Specifically, the standard sins of dishonest trade. Or maybe it was just that they competed with us commercially, which we know they did. At one point, the sages changed the value of the shekel to match the shekel of Tsor, because their shekel was the going rate in international commerce. So maybe they were just our competitors. But I would add one note, and we're gonna wrap up with this, which is, I don't know that you need to identify an Avera for Tsor at all. Meaning we're expending energy trying to figure out what did Tsor do wrong, such that they end up on the bad list, the list of nations that are going to collapse, right? That's what we're asking. Again, remember what we've been saying regarding Tsor. Good opportunity for review. We asked what our relationship is with them. It's a mixed relationship, especially when you throw in Sidon. But fundamentally, in the early days, it was very positive. We pointed to three prophecies against Tsor. Amos says they sold us to Edom, and therefore they'll be destroyed. Yoel said they took our money and they sold us to the Greeks, or maybe Romans. Yechezkel talks about them falling because they egged on the destruction of the temple, and because of their arrogance, what exactly is this? What is the sin that's being identified right here in our chapter? What are we working with? So, Radak says that it's that they joined in the destruction of the second temple. Abarbanel says they kidnapped Jewish youths and they sold them. Dan Mikra thinks that it's commerce. But the truth of the matter is, what was this whole section of Yeshaya about? Starting with Perek Yud Gimel, starting with chapter 13. This is the longest section we've looked at in the book, right? It was all about not relying on alliances with these nations. All of these nations are going to fall. So maybe Tsor hasn't done anything wrong yet. They will. But maybe they haven't done anything wrong yet at all. But the point is, we have seen them as allies for generations. And Yeshaya is saying, don't look to them for an alliance. They are going to fall also. And I don't care why. God has some business with them. They did something wrong. Whatever it was. They were arrogant. Who knows? But that's not the point. And that's why Yeshaya doesn't bother to talk about it. That's not his point. His point is not to say they're bad people and that's why they're getting punished. His point is to say, don't rely on them as your support. You follow? That's why Yeshaya doesn't discuss it. Mush.
Maybe there's a very subtle subtext here that Yeshaya was also speaking to Tyre and Sidon, who, as you said, they have an ally saying,
Right. The problem in general with how to read this section, and we talked about it way back when we started the section, is whether we think that Yeshaya is actually talking to them or talking to us. The general tenor of it sounds like he's talking to us as opposed to them. But I hear your point.
I mean, that's what I'm just saying. Sometimes.
Okay.
You want to read it?
Right. So we have one little bit of introduction left, which is to discuss why we're there here at the end of the list. Like Yerushalayim should have been the last one on the list. Why is Tzor tacked on at the end? So I want to talk about that next time. And then to do the chapter. But one thing that I'm very quickly coming to the conclusion that we need to not do sentence by sentence. I think that people lose the forest for the trees by doing it. And I know that a few people have been stalwart saying we have to do sentence by sentence. But the more I think about it, the more I think that it's sacrificing too much. I don't know. I'm still going back and forth, especially because I looked ahead at the next Prakim, and there's such beautiful text in Yeshaya coming up. So I'm probably going to vacillate still, but it may shift more towards big picture and less towards sentence by sentence as we go. Thank you very much.